Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Aubrey Sarvis, who is Executive Director of the Service Members Legal Defense Network. He's an Army veteran, served 3 years, 13 months of the 7th Infantry Division in the Demilitarized Zone in South Korea, and has been working with SLDN since 2007. And Aubrey Sarvis, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be here.
So this has been a long and arduous struggle, don't ask, don't tell, over the years.
It has indeed, over 17 years. Over 17. We still have the don't ask, don't tell law.
And at that time, when that first law was passed, under President Clinton, people thought it was a huge step forward. At least some people did.
Some people did. Some people saw it as a compromise. Some people thought that it could work if the military didn't ask. Service members wouldn't tell, and that it might have a chance. The reality is it has not worked. Over 14,000 service members have been discharged under this law. Mm. Another 4,000 service members have left each year because of this law.
Each year
not
since
because
when?
They were discharged, but because they decided they would leave when their tour of duty was up because they did not want to serve under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
And how many years has this been happening?
17 years.
17 years.
We recently passed the 17th year mark. And the other reality is we've lost a generation of young people who haven't even considered a career in the military because they did not want to hide who they were or serve in silence. So a young generation hasn't even considered going to West Point or to the Naval Academy or to the Air Force Academy, or hasn't gone in to serve in one of the critical skills that that we need as we fight two wars.
Now, did your decision not to remain in the service have to do with this, or did you just decide
No, we
time
actually,
was up?
That was back in the 60s, and we didn't have Don't Ask, Don't Tell then, but we had gays and lesbians were excluded from serving by regulation. There was a regulatory prohibition against gays and lesbians serving. And that came about in the late 1940s. But this new law has been on the books since 1993. As you know, a bill has passed the House that would repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, coupled with a certification process. And we're trying to get the bill up in the Senate over the next few weeks. It's my hope that it might come up in this summer, but that doesn't look likely, so we're probably looking at mid-September for Senate action.
Now, as you were describing, right now we have the Murphy Amendment, right?
The Murphy Amendment in the House was adopted, and that provided a process whereby Don't Ask, Don't Tell would be repealed if the bill passed the House and the Senate, and there would be certification by the President, the Secretary of Defense, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And all of this would follow a report due from the Pentagon Working Group due December 1st to the Congress. A bit complicated, but it is a roadmap to repeal. We've made a lot of progress this year, certainly getting a repeal through the House was a huge milestone. I think we can get it through the Senate, and then we've got to get this this certification process done by the end of the year or early next year.
Even if it takes the Senate, but the Senate first has to pass its version of the bill, correct?
The Senate has to pass its version, and we are working to keep the Senate version identical to the House language so there will not be complicated issues in the conference committee between the House and the Senate.
And how is that lining up now in the Senate?
Well, we believe that there will be an amendment to strike the repeal provisions on the floor. A couple senators have indicated they're going to do that. We believe we have the votes to defeat that amendment to strike the provisions. There could be one or two other amendments, and we'll just have to beat those back. But it's very tight. We're going to be working very hard over the summer to ensure that we have the votes that we need to carry the day in the Senate. But we're not there yet, and we need everyone engaged in reaching out to their senators to vote with Senator Carl Levin, who's chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Chairman Levin is going to be managing the bill on the Senate floor, and so your listeners should ask their two senators to follow the lead of Chairman Levin when this bill is debated on the Senate floor.
I think the senators from at least some of our listening area will be that. I don't know about Pennsylvania, Maryland. I'm sure the senators there will back it, and in Virginia as well. But I'm curious, and it's a very tough political question because it's been so hotly debated, especially with gay and lesbian groups and groups that support gay and lesbian rights,
mm-hmm.
About the President Obama's campaign pledge. And
well, the president, called for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell during the campaign. He called for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in his State of the Union address earlier this year. I believe that the president was instrumental in the positive testimony from Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen in the Senate this year on February 2nd. Do we wish the president could have done more sooner? Sure. I suspect that there are many organizations with many issues who feel that way. But we're appreciative. We're grateful for the president's support. And if we get in a tight pinch in the Senate, we'll certainly be calling on him for help.
Especially if you have to come down to a tiebreaker.
For sure. For sure. And I have no doubt that the vice president, Senator Biden, would vote with us to cast a decisive vote if we needed him.
Talk about what you know about the in the armed service in the military, about what servicemen are serving say about this now. I'm talking about especially straight servicemen.
Well, I think by and large the views of the service members are close to the views of their civilian counterparts. I mean, where do these service members come from? They come from the private sector. They were civilians before they went into the military. We know from the polling that nearly 80% of Americans support repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We know that the numbers poll even higher the younger people are. And the reality is in the armed forces, over 70% of the force is made up of young people between 18 and 32. So I think by and large there will be good support within the ranks for open service. But at the end of the day, it's not a popularity contest.
Right.
The military doesn't poll on what do you want for chow, or where do you want to get deployed, or what time you want to start your day.
Right.
But we're not naive. We know that there will be some service members who will be opposed to it and who will not like it. But at the end of the day, I think the services will adapt readily, and I think we'll have a smooth and effective implementation of this new law.
I mean, as you see in other militaries around the world, some of whom have served alongside of Americans, whether you agree with the wars not in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Dutch and others that have open policies when it comes to being
well, now over 26 countries, and indeed our allies in Iraq and Afghanistan, some of those do have open service. Certainly Israel, Great Britain, France, Germany, Australia, and some of those have been with us in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it did not create any tension or problems or challenges when those European gay and lesbian service members were serving side by side with our troops. So I don't think the experience with respect to implementation is going to be any different than it was in the European countries. One of the things that the military does very well is adapt to change, and we've seen that over the years. When President Truman issued his order in 1948 to end segregation, even though it took a few years, that change came about, by and large, smoothly. When women were admitted to the service academies, that change came about smoothly. That's not to say that if you had polled the cadets at West Point or the midshipmen at the Naval Academy in 1976 when women were admitted, that a majority might well have opposed it. But that's not the point, is that it's all about the mission and bringing together the best team to achieve that.
And it's interesting, I think, that I don't know if any polling has been done about this. You would know better than I. But, I mean, anybody who has served in a tight situation, a combat situation especially, and you know that there are somebody with you is gay, a lot of those are the men and women who are would not be opposed to the ending of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because once you've been through that, you understand how it's just a situation where you're living, working, and surviving together.
Absolutely. It's folks there, particularly on the ground, whether it's in Afghanistan or Iraq, they appreciate that it is about the mission, and I care about my comrade's ability to protect my back. I care about if he's a good soldier or Marine. I don't care about his sexual orientation. I want to know if I can depend on her or if I can depend on him. That's what I want to know. The personal preferences, personal lives are secondary.
In just a little bit of time we have left, Aubrey Sarvis, and again, Aubrey Sarvis is Executive Director of the Servicemen's Legal Defense Network. I really would like our listeners to understand a little bit about the stories of the 14,000 who have been kicked out of the service and the 4,000 year who leave, and what you can tell us a bit about what drove them out or what kicked them out.
Well, the law, Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, was the catalyst for their departure. In many cases, they were outed by a friend, a former friend, a colleague, unfortunately, in some cases, even family members, for different reasons. So they were not able to serve in silence. And we see this repeatedly. You can learn more about the individual stories by going to our website, sldn.org. But at the end of the day, it's about the reality of this law that's in place is it's not don't ask. The reality is the services can ask almost any time they choose to. There's only one exception, and that is when you enter the service. They do not ask you when you're volunteering. But later, if they feel like they have any suspicion or reason to ask, they do. And we can tell you from our experience that it is very challenging. It is very tough to serve successfully under this law. So there's been a huge casualty, a huge loss for our country, and so it's very important that this year and this Congress that we get legislation passed to end this law. And even today, I would remind your listeners that even though the bill has passed the House, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, is still in place. You have to be very careful not to violate this law. Hopefully the Senate will act soon, and hopefully we will have certification, and repeal will finally be gone. But in the interim, all of your listeners should be aware that the law is still on the books, and unfortunately, every day service members are being discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So let's pull out all the stops and focus really hard on the Senate over the next few weeks and get a favorable bill out of the Senate that would repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Aubrey Sarvis, Executive Director of Service Members Legal Defense Network. Thank you so much for your time and addressing this issue with our listeners.
Thank you very much, Mark. Good to be with you and your listeners.
Thank you, Aubrey. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. Welcome, I'm Mark Steiner, and once again, gracing our studios is Shodika, one of the great performers and kind of really minds in our musical world, who's one of America's great beatboxers from right here in Baltimore. He's been on our show many times over the years, but he has an incredible performance coming up tomorrow night with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, and it's no time better than that to have him back on the airwaves with us. And Shodika, welcome. Good to have you back, man. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Always good to see you. Always. So this particular concert happening tomorrow with the symphony, Maren Alsop conducting, there's going to be music of Frank Zappa, the music of Philip Glass, and this, until I heard the piece today earlier, I never heard of him before, Jan Mikkel Vanio, who's this Finnish composer who composed piece of violins and beatbox. That's a bit of a, when I saw that, I went, what?
It's something that hasn't been done a lot in the world of hip-hop and orchestral music. It's happened a few times, but there's still plenty of room for a lot of musical and creative experimentation, so I'm really excited about making this happen.
What do you know about this conductor, Jan Mikkel Vanio, the Finnish conductor, who it's called, was it Fujiko's Fairy Tale?
That's right.
What do you know about his work and how he approached this and why he did what he did?
I'm not exactly sure where the inspiration came from, but I imagine he must be a fan of Japanese anime, and he seems to have an interest in cross-cultural events or unifications, implementing different elements from metal to hip-hop and rock, and making them combine with orchestra music to kind of bring alive these imaginations of like imaginary anime realms or universes of sorts.
You say he's into anime because of the way the sound of his music is? The way what you hear in his music, or?
Well, from what I read in his bio and what I visited on his MySpace page, that's what's read there. And you can kind of, in Fujiko's Fairy Tale, you can hear the landscape kind of come alive through the different moments of tension in the music. And the fact that he's kind of giving it rhythm, a rhythmic foundation or a groove, you know, it's, I don't know. It's like what comes to mind for me is the soundtrack from the movie Fight Club, you know, like kind of creating this landscape. But, you know, there needs to be a groove in order to keep the momentum going. So
you've never performed with the BSO, Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, before, have you?
No.
No, this is your first time.
This is my first time.
But you did. I remember we did this piece that we recorded with you. You were recording with someone who played the percussionist, one of the percussionists from the symphony.
Brian Prechtel.
Prechtel, and another percussionist.
Barry Dove, yeah.
Right.
I feel like that was sort of a prelude to making this event come to life. That was the concert that we did at the University of Baltimore.
Right.
That was like a rhythmic fusion concert.
Right.
And, you know, just we found grooves in, you know, both of our rhythmic worlds. And there will be some of that here, but there will be moments where I'll have to definitely implement a strong groove, and there will be other moments where I'll have to take away from the groove and do something a little more non-rhythmic or arrhythmic and try to create more of a soundscape, if you will, or something more atmospheric.
Because of the music calls for it?
Because the moment of the music will call for it, right?
So let's play a little piece to get people a sense of this. So we're going to play something from Jan Mikkel Vanio's Fujiko's Fairy Tale, the symphony will perform tomorrow night. among other things. But this is the piece that you'll be performing with Shodika, who's with us now. And it is a it's a piece for four violins and a beatboxer. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's we'll lead the music is going to come in, and then what you're going to hear is Shodika coming in live over the recorded sound, not with a BSO, but you'll hear the BSO play it tomorrow night when you come down and join us down there at the Meyerhof. So let's do this. Imagine that at the Meyerhof sound system on stage, live orchestra, the BSO, and Shodika. That would be something.
I felt like that was part of my rehearsal for the week, so that felt good. That felt real good. Yeah.
Good. So what do you think of this kind of collaboration? I can really do it, but first, I really can hear that. I mean, I can see you on stage at the Meyerhof in this beautiful place and the great sound that's in that place
mm-hmm.
with this live orchestra under Marin Alsop. And you doing that to this piece by Vanio, it could be an amazing event.
Well, you know, I've been doing some really, really interesting research as to these sorts of fusion events occurring with the worlds of orchestra music, symphony music, and other realms, whether they be rock or jazz or hip-hop. And I've come across some really beautiful moments between Bobby McFerrin and a German orchestra, Metallica and the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, Kenny Mohammed, the Human Orchestra, legendary beatbox from New York City, and the New York Philharmonic. And these moments of just raw energy and raw talent, yet really beautiful orchestral music just coming together as one. It's like there are moments where you're like, okay, I'm listening to the orchestra, oh, now I'm listening to Bobby McFerrin or Metallica. And then in between the two worlds, there's this missing link that says, oh, wait, I'm listening to really beautiful music. Oh, wait a minute, I forgot that I was listening to an orchestra and Bobby McFerrin, or I forgot I was listening to Metallica and the San Francisco Symphony. And so that's my main inspiration, is to kind of find those moments as much as possible. You know, I want people to kind of bounce back and forth between whoa, this is beatboxing with an orchestra. Oh, this is an orchestra. Oh, this is just beatboxing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in between all of those moments, I want people to just kind of get lost in the moment as much as possible and just kind of forget that they're it's no different from watching a movie
mm-hmm.
with these spectacular special effects, but the story or the heart of the story captures you in such a way that you forget that you're watching this in 3D, or you forget that like what you're seeing is mostly visual effects. So, you know, I want the music to be the tool for those moments as much as possible.
And I could actually see this. I don't know what was done most recently with Bobby McFerrin in Berlin, but I could see this marriage of these art forms taking place with pieces that you wouldn't think you'd marry them with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I can hear it with Stravinsky. I can hear it with Beethoven. I can hear it even in the lighter side of Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
I could see how that this could play with those things in creative ways that we may not even be approaching at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I love to see those kind of things happen between worlds such as jazz, rock, hip-hop. I mean, these American-bred genres have a lot of raw energy. You know, they play from the gut more so than they play from their intelligence, you know, and they play from the heart more than they play from their minds. And, you know, to have those moments of just raw, pure, instinctual energy, you know, mesh or clash or combine with something that's a little more melodic or more harmonious, and to have those come together. I don't even know if there's a word to describe how those moments affect me. So
this piece you're doing with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night and Jan Mikkel Vanio's Fujiko's Fairy Tale, is it, when he wrote this, did he write the score for the beatboxer, or did you come in and create that with this piece?
Well, with this collaboration, there's a little bit of both. The parts for the beatboxer were very much composed, and they're very exact. But they're more so very exactly composed for the specific beatboxer that did it the first time with the
mm-hmm.
Finnish,
mm-hmm.
with the premiere in Finland. His name is Ruba Rock. And so, like with playing certain traditional instruments such as the turntables, or with jazz piano, or with jazz vocalist, there's such a personal approach to it. It wouldn't even make sense for me to do it exactly as it was done by this previous beatboxer. So they've graciously allowed me to kind of do a Baltimore remix of this U.S. premiere. So I'm definitely going to make a lot of changes, but what has been composed will act as my blueprint for Friday evening.
And Friday night it is. And Friday night is when we want everybody to come over to the Meyerhof to hear the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Shotika will be performing. He'll be performing Jan Mikkel Vanio's Fujiko's Fairy Tale. It's four strings and beatbox, really a unique piece by this Finnish composer. And we'd play a lot more, but we can't. A lot of copyright issues, which is fine. That means you got to go hear the whole thing of the symphony, which is a good thing. Marin Alsop's conducting. You're also going to have four pieces by Frank Zappa. This is a Baltimore night. Baltimore's two celebrated native sons, maybe three because Shotika is there. But Frank Zappa and Philip Glass, of course, is the cousin to who? Ira Glass. And they'll be doing his Symphony Number 4, Heroes, and Zappa's Dupree's Paradise, Bebop Tango, Outrage at Valdez, and G-Spot Tornado. It'll start at 7:30 at the Meyerhof tomorrow night. You can call 410-783-8000, 410-783-8000, or bsomusic.org for tickets. Join us all there tomorrow night for this really unique Baltimore performance with the symphony and my dear friend Shotika, who will be performing for the first time with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra.
First time since I worked there 6 years ago.
That's right. And what did you do there 6 years ago?
I was an usher.
Usher, that's right. From the usher to the stage. I like it. From the usher to the stage. That could be the name of the book. Anyway,
That's not a bad idea.
That's not a bad idea. Russians to the stage. I like it. So we want you all to join us today. This is going to be an incredible evening. And as we go out, Shodak, why don't you leave us with a bit of, not stuff from tomorrow night, but just a bit of you.
Will you join me?
Will I join you? Have mercy. You don't want me to do that, man. I'll try. We'll see. Tomorrow night, BSO. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Marianne Amos. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com.